Hello, good morning, and welcome to day two of the NFL's legal tampering period. No, folks, it's not the beginning of the league year yet. That happens tomorrow, Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern. But as mysteriously, like right when it started, a whole bunch of deals happened as if these guys had talked before they were supposed to, but we won't get into that. What we'll get into is all the stuff we saw and heard and read about and reviewed from day one of free agency, even though none of these deals are official yet. They're not deals, they're agreements for now. My good friend Greg Cosell over there, as always, on the X's and O's. Greg, kind of a busy day yesterday, kind of a car wash. A lot of stuff happened.
Yeah, and the one that I'm pretty excited about, Tommy Townsend signing a 2-year deal with the Houston Texans.
I know. Well, you know, you gotta have your punter. So, do you watch a lot of punter all 22? Do you have like a separate folder for that on your computer?
No, and you know, I don't do special teams. It's just one of those things. You know, I only have so many hours in the day, Doug. You know,
there was one. The only all 22 I've done of a special teams play was that Patriots. I don't remember the guy's name. He was a linebacker, like number 49. He was doing that speed rush to block, and I had to do like all 22 of it. It was fascinating. That's you know, in the 15 years I've done this, that's the only like kicking all 22. But I digress, because what am I talking
about? All right. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess there was a lot going on. And, you know, well, of course, every team that signs a guy now, they're ready to go to the Super Bowl. So, you know.
Well, let's talk about one team that was very much a quarterback away and now appears not to be. And that's the Atlanta Falcons, who signed Kirk Cousins to a 4-year, $180 million contract, $100 million in guarantees. 2024 and 2025 salaries are fully guaranteed, $50 million signing bonus. The roster bonuses kick in 26 and 27. So you're kind of looking at a 2-year window to get Cousins with all that first-round talent, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, Bijan Robinson, literal first-round talent. Plus, they signed Darnell Mooney to a 3-year, $39 million deal with $23 million guaranteed just this morning. So they are packing it with weapons. We talked a little bit earlier today, and you brought up something that I agree with, that they're sneaky good on defense, good offensive line. I mean, this may be a situation where they were only a quarterback away from contending. So what does Cousins bring if he's healthy and playing like he was last year?
Yeah, well, let's assume that. I mean, he's a very professional quarterback. I think he's a very good player. You know, people around the league think very highly of Kirk Cousins. You know, fans may not, because for whatever reason, he seems to be one of those guys that people don't think highly of. Yes, we know he's not, you know, been to a championship game. We know he's not been to a Super Bowl. But if you talk about consistency of execution over time, he is that guy. He throws the ball a lot better than people might think. He has a very good feel for the pocket. He's not immobile. Every once in a while, he makes a scramble that gets you a first down. But he's a really smart quarterback. You know, this is a team now with, just as you said, clearly an above-average O-line. They may want to feel that they can upgrade that through the draft to some degree. But, you know, now we'll see if Kyle Pitts can become a much bigger factor in terms of target share within that offense. And now with London on one side, Mooney on the other side, Bijan Robinson coming off, you know, a strong rookie season, also a very good receiver, as we know.
Yeah, he can flex out to anywhere on the floor.
Right, right. So, I mean, this is a team now that has a quality professional quarterback who knows how to use his weapons with some good weapons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they'll be an interesting team as we speak today. I mean, you know, we know free agency, you know, happens. It's what, today's date is March 12th, and there's a lot of time between now and the NFL season. But if you just look right now as to what they have on the offensive side of the ball, it looks pretty enticing.
Yeah, and they really haven't had that since Matt Ryan was in his salad days. It's been a while since the Falcons have had like a more than incredible quarterback. So it's certainly
interesting
move. Another quarterback deal, Russell Wilson to the Steelers for 1 year, $1.2 million league minimum, because the Broncos are paying him $36 million this year to not play for them. You know, we know from an explosive play standpoint and all that, Wilson is an upgrade over, you know, whoever they've had since Roethlisberger was in his salad days. But just you're in that Arthur Smith offense, where it is a lot of boot. It's a lot of explosive plays off play action. Smith likes to go over the middle, which Russell really doesn't do. But how does that fit look to you with the pieces the Steelers have on offense?
Well, It, by the way, it's a team that does have good pieces on offense as well. Yes. I think it'll be what Mike Tomlin wants and the reason he hired Arthur Smith, which there'll be a lot of run game. There'll be a lot of play action. They'll try to define it for Russell Wilson pretty clearly. You make a great point about going over the middle because Pat Freiermuth is a very good tight end, maybe overlooked by some simply because their pass game has not been a volume pass game with a lot of targets for a lot of the receivers. But, you know, I think that's the approach they'd want to take. They still have Najee Harris. They still have Jaylen Warren. So they're going to try to run the ball. You know, they hired Arthur Smith, but I think you and I both know that Mike Tomlin kind of sets the tone for what he wants his team to look like.
Well, he is the main part of the whole thing, whether offense or defense. I mean, he's the guy.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, we know that he wants his team on both sides to be a physical team. So the offense will start with the run game. They'll work off that. And then, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, look, George Pickens, to me, you could argue that just sheer talent is a top five receiver in the NFL. Now, I don't know how it's going to play out in terms of his target share or his receptions. He did get up over, I believe, 1,100 yards last year, and maybe a lot of people aren't even aware of that. But, you know, they do have some good weapons. They're going to expect their O-line to continue to improve. With, you know, Broderick Jones was a rookie a year ago, clearly had ups and downs, but he was a top 15 draft pick. I'm sure they expect him, when you take an offensive lineman that high, you expect that player to start to move toward being an all-pro type player. We'll see if that takes place this year. But I think that the offense is going to be pretty defined in what they want to do. It's not going to be a throw ball offense.
Mm-mm. No, Pickens is going to get his fade balls. When you watched Wilson and Sean Payton's offense, where do you think things went wrong or fell apart or just didn't gel?
Well, Russell Wilson, and you know this well from being in Seattle, Russell Wilson at his core doesn't mean he can't do it, and he obviously has done it. If you play quarterback in the NFL, of course you do it on, you know, enough. But at his core, he's not a true timing rhythm player.
Nope.
And I think that that's a disconnect with Sean Payton. And that's why many of us probably believed that that marriage would not work out, because stylistically, the way in which Wilson plays, and he certainly had a solid career, we're not denigrating Russell Wilson. It just becomes a matter of styles. He does not play like that, and he's not likely to play like that now.
No, I think at a certain point you are. And he played better, I think, last year than people kind of think, but he is definitely that kind of quarterback. And at a certain point, you're just going to, you know, be who you are. A couple more quarterback deals before we get to other things. Baker Mayfield, 3 years, $100 million, $50 million guaranteed to stay in Tampa. We talked a few times last season on the X's and O's about how well Mayfield worked within the structure of Dave Canales' offense. What do you think it will look like under Liam Cohen? Because I know you're very familiar with Cohen's work. How do you think that all fits together?
Yeah, and Cohen, by the way, was with the Rams when Mayfield was there for that brief time.
Yes, so he was. That Raiders game and that whole thing. Yeah,
he's very familiar.
That's a lot of why this happened.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that that's what you want to do with Baker. I mean, in a sense, you want to really define things well for Baker. And I think he's willing to play like that. I don't think he's one of those guys that wants to step outside. I think he's really comfortable. When does he play his best? Think about this year when he was at his best and how rhythmic based that offense was. He would hit his back foot. The ball would come out. You know, that's the way ultimately that Liam Cohen wants to play. And that's the way Baker Mayfield is at his best. So you could argue that just if you're talking philosophically and structurally and stylistically, it's a very good marriage. You know, I think they would probably like to upgrade their O-line a bit, I would think.
Yeah.
But, you know, remains to be seen. There's, you know, free agency, there's always a second and a third part of it, and then we get to the draft. Because there's still good players who are sort of under the radar players at the less sexy positions, and those guys end up getting signed. And it's very often those guys that end up helping teams quite a bit.
Yep. One of my favorite players as we do this is still available, and that's Connor Williams, the center for the Dolphins, and the Bucs have a need at center, so who knows. One more quarterback deal, and I'm going to ask you a general question. Gardner Minshew, 2 years, $25 million, $15 million guaranteed. So it's Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. As I said to you this morning, I don't think this precludes them from getting a quarterback in the draft or whatever. It's just like, okay, if we don't get the trade up we want or the quarterbacks aren't sitting right in the first round, we can at least bridge this while we're still rebuilding. I don't think it's any sort of huge, oh my God, Gardner Minshew could be the next Ken Stabler or whatever. I don't think it's that.
No, it was an interesting signing though, because, you know, I don't know what they think of Aiden O'Connell. I mean, McDaniels was the head coach when he was drafted, and you could see O'Connell being a Josh McDaniels kind of quarterback.
Oh yeah. McDaniels loved him.
What's that?
McDaniels loved him.
Yeah. I think there'd be significant questions as to whether O'Connell can really be, you know, a quality enough NFL starter. We know Minshew has done that. Obviously, they came within one game in the playoffs this season when he was with the Colts. So you can line up and play. But, you know, I think if you're being realistic, and it's no knock on either one, it's just who they are you really going into the season with those two guys as your quarterbacks? I would think not, but again, you never know how a draft plays out, and they probably do feel that both those guys can line up and play if need be. But I would really be surprised if they felt they're set at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I mean, Minshew, kind of like Russell and kind of like Baker in a diet version. And I've been a Minshew guy for a long time, so I'm not denigrating him. If he's in within structure, it's okay. When Minshew gets out of structure, I mean, most of his interceptions, most of his really bad plays, he's running around, he's leaving the pocket before he needs to, and things just kind of get hairy. Now, Luke Getsy is their new OC, former Bears guy. So what is a Luke Getsy offense, and how do you think Minshew might fit into that?
Well, I think he theoretically fits because, look, you have to look at what he did in Chicago with Justin Fields. It's a totally different animal. He sure came from the Packers. So you have to think of it in terms more of the little floor Shanahan style where they want to run the ball. You know, that kind of offense helps a quarterback because, as you know, what do you get a lot of? You get a lot of motion. You get a lot of bunch. You get a lot of stack. You get a lot of reduced splits. You get a lot of things that define things pretty clearly for a quarterback. So in an ideal world, you know, either Minshew or O'Connell can function in that offense and probably function okay, and maybe even at a higher level than they functioned before. And maybe that's what they feel. Who knows? Don't forget, where they draft in the first round, there may not be a quarterback available that they love. You know,
exactly.
You don't know. You never know that. You know, it's draft time, and you and I will get to that, you know, down the road. And you and I can talk about players we like, but we don't know what teams' draft boards look like. Nobody does. So it all becomes just a guess. We might say, oh, we love this guy. They should take this guy. They may have that guy as their 30th best player and not want to take him 8th or 9th, wherever the Raiders draft. You know, so that that's why, as you know, I don't talk about that stuff. I just love evaluating the players in terms of projection and transition, but I don't try to guess, you know, what a team might like just because they have a need. See, that's what people do. They take a need and they say, well, they should take this guy, but they have no idea how the team evaluates that guy. You know, so we don't know how the Raiders feel, but I bet they do feel that they can line up and play.
Yeah, they're 13th in the order right now.
Yeah, so
A lot of teams ahead of them in desperate need of
So they might get to the point where they feel that, you know, after that first tier of quarterbacks, wherever that tier ends, and that's also open for debate, but yeah, wherever that tier might end, in their mind, they may feel we're not getting a quarterback. So they know that they have two guys that they can line up and play with.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, Carolina, Washington, New England, and then right before them is Minnesota and Denver. So, you know, a lot of play there. So let me ask this in general. I mean, obviously the Falcons are out drafting a quarterback. Probably the Buccaneers are in the short term because that's a big deal for Baker. Minshew, we talked about. Do you think this precludes the Steelers from taking a quarterback high in this draft? Or are they yes, like, okay, we can just – you know, paste it together for a year with Russ and kind of build, maybe get a really good offensive lineman or whatever?
I can only give you my opinion, and it's sure, probably worth nothing when it comes to what a team is going to do. and I accept that. You know, I don't think
we are, Greg. That's all we can do with this.
Yeah,
one.
There's things I don't know, Doug, and that's okay. Yeah. I'm not going to know them. My guess would be it would preclude them from taking a quarterback. I think now that they signed Wilson to a 1-year deal, we know that Tomlin still likes Kenny Pickett. You know, obviously Pickett has, when he's played, not performed to the level they had hoped, but he's been hurt a lot. So he's only going into his third year. It's not as if he's an 8-year veteran now. I would be really surprised if they took a quarterback. Again, that's just my personal opinion based on the signing of Wilson. Mike Tomlin is not in the rebuild mode. That's not the way he sees the game.
Never have been.
You know, so I think that they feel that they've got – well, I guess the larger question is, is it a given that Wilson's the day one starter, or is there a competition?
They always say it's a competition. You know,
I'd be hard pressed to think they signed Russell Wilson not to be the starter.
Yeah, because I mean, what it does, I mean, and through history, this has happened, and guys either come back or they don't. You're a first round pick a couple of years ago, and now they're bringing in a guy to sort of, you know, spackle over you. That's I don't know. That's tough.
Right. So I again, just to wrap up, I'd be surprised if they drafted a quarterback within the first couple of rounds. Maybe there's a guy they like, you know, down the road, and in the fourth round they take a quarterback, but I'd be surprised if they took one early.
Yep. So a few just kind of team decisions and philosophical things, which I know you and I like to discuss. Let's start with the LA Rams. And last year, Greg, you and I discussed how the Rams went really heavy, like a kind of a whiplash thing from inside outside zone, which we all know, you know, Sean McVay, inside outside zone, the Shanahan thing and whatever. They went a lot more gap, a lot more power, a lot more duo last season. And now they re-signed Kevin Dotson to a 3-year, $48 million contract, $32 million guaranteed. And then they gave former Lions guard Jonah Jackson a 3-year, $51 million contract with $34 million guaranteed. This most likely moves Steve Avila from left guard to center, where he played over 1,000 snaps at TCU. Everything I've heard is, yeah, he's ready for it. He's a great communicator. He can make all the line calls and whatnot. But again, Greg, the Rams have morphed from an inside-outside zone team to a gap power team, and they want to run the ball right through your face. That's clear. What does that do also for the passing game?
Well, there's another element to that, Doug, and I was just going to mention the pass game, and I'm glad you then asked the question. Because, you know, you have Matthew Stafford, who can still throw the ball extremely well. He's not immobile, but he's later in his career. You really don't want to have him moving around. So now what did they do? They shored up with size and mass the interior of their O-line, because Avila is 325, 330 pounds. Jonah Jackson is probably 325. By the way, I remember watching him. He played initially at Rutgers, then his final year at Ohio State, and I loved him coming out of Ohio State, and he stepped right into the NFL and became a starter for the Lions. So he's a good player. Dotson is another big man. So, you know, I think it's a little – you nailed it with the run game. It's a little different philosophy now. These are not zone offensive linemen in the run game, so there will be more gap scheme. There will be more duo.
I would need to look it up, but if the Rams didn't finish top five in duo runs, I'd be shocked, because it was like a lot of what I saw.
So I think you're looking to, you know, the interior of your O-line controls the depth of the pocket, and you want the depth controlled as much as you can. You know, like I said, Stafford's not immobile, and he certainly, you know, but ultimately he's a pocket quarterback. Ultimately.
As you said, the guards control the depth, the tackles control the width of the pocket.
Yeah, the guards in the center control the depth, the tackles control the width. So, you know, you want the depth controlled so Stafford can drop back. He can have room to deliver the football. He still has a power arm. You know, Stafford's a great quarterback. I mean, to me, he's a Hall of Famer. We'll see how that plays out down the road. You know, I think that's what they're doing in addition to the run game, which you're so correct about. But that's what they're doing when it comes to the pass game. So, you know, I think that Sean McVay is sort of adjusting, you know, which, you know, you'd like – I think that's great. I mean, you want to see coaches see how things are changing, see how their team is, see how the league is, and make the necessary adjustments.
They had, you know, they really changed a lot of stuff. They had, you know, Nacua and all those guys, and it was like a different offense, but it was really highly entertaining and explosive.
Yeah.
Panthers were another team that spent heavy on guards. I remember you and I talking about quarterbacks in the draft last season and how Bryce Young would need the pocket sort of defined for him. Well, they gave Dolphins former Dolphins guard Robert Hunt a 5-year, $100 million deal with $63 million guaranteed. Then they pried Damian Lewis away from Seattle with a 4-year, $53 million deal with $26.2 million guaranteed. So when we get into the kind of pocket Bryce Young needs instead of that sort of elastic style he has, what is – and I also want to – I mean, you look at the massive deals given to Chris Jones, Justin Madubuike, Christian Wilkins. Does this go to the increased need to create and prevent pressure inside with the increase in quick game? I think this all ties together. We're like, oh my God, they're spending this much money on guards. Well, guards are really important when you have these just terrorizing guys like Jones and Wilkins and, you know, Madubuike. So first, what does this mean for Bryce Young to have that level of guard? And second, kind of how things change with the interior pass rush and pass rush prevention with more quick game in the NFL?
I think it all goes together. And I think, you know, Bryce Young is a perfect example. I'm certainly not going to compare him to Drew Brees at this point in his career, but I think it's the same concept. You know, Russell Wilson,
by the way.
Yeah. Bryce Young needs room to deliver the ball. He does not have a big arm. He's not a sit on his back foot and drive the ball thrower. He needs room in front of him so he can step into his throws. That's the only way he can generate any kind of real velocity on his throws. And there's always throws in games where you need to do that. You know, the quick game stuff, all that's different, whether you know it's RPOs, whether it's true quick game. Those are obviously different kinds of throws, but you still don't want somebody being driven into the quarterback's lap on a three-step drop timing throw. You want to feel comfortable throwing the football.
Ideally not.
You know, they've decided to, you know, pay money to guards. You know, and it all goes back, and we've discussed this before, to what Sean Payton did with Drew Brees back, I guess it was 2006 when they both got to New Orleans.
Yes.
And he realized how great a quarterback Brees could be, but under certain conditions. He needed that space in front of him because he's 6 feet tall. And Young is in the same situation. Young is a shorter quarterback who needs that space in front of him. And, you know, we all can think back and just visualize Drew Brees and the way he stepped into his throws. I mean, he was that's the way he threw the ball. He had to step into his throws.
Yeah.
Young is very much the same guy. And as I said, I'm not comparing the players apples to apples. We're talking stylistically and philosophically.
Sure. The Vikings probably not going to re-sign Danielle Hunter because the Vikings went out and gave former Texans edge rusher Jonathan Greenard a 4-year, $76 million deal with $42 million guaranteed. And then they gave former Dolphins edge rusher Andrew Van Ginkle, one of my favorite players to watch last year, a two-year, $20 million deal with $14 million guaranteed. They gave Blake Cashman a 3-year deal as well. But I'm really interested in this Greenard-Van Ginkle duo. Last season, the Vikings had an NFL-high blitz rate of 51.5%, but their pressure rate of 21.9% was middle of the pack. And I think both Greenard and Van Ginkle they both had 53 total pressures last season, which is interesting. And they're both adept at getting to the quarterback quickly, whether it's inside counters or lining at different places. Obviously, I'm not saying they're better fits than Danielle Hunter, who's an amazing player, but I found it interesting that the Vikings were sort of, you know, half on the phone with Hunter, and they go out and get these two guys.
You know, I think I really like Greenard.
Yeah.
He's pretty much a defensive end. I think Van Ginkle's the interesting guy.
Yes.
Because we kind of know what Flores likes to do with his defense. He does like movable chess piece players, and Van Ginkle can do that. We saw him last year line up on the edge on the ball. We saw him line up off the ball. You can move him around. He can be a joker in passing situations where you can line up anywhere along your defensive front on the ball or off the ball. So, you know, he's a really intriguing player. Now, when he was at Wisconsin, he was an edge rusher. And then obviously when he got to Miami, they played him in different spots. So he's used to playing multiple positions.
And he's used to playing for Flores because I believe they drafted him the first year Flores was the head coach.
I believe that is so. So Flores is very familiar with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's a really intriguing player. He's got size. He's got length. He's got pretty good quickness. He does have pass rush ability. You'll see him lining up anyway. Look, you know, it's interesting how different players become important pieces that you don't even think about these players, depending upon who the coach is. I mean, at this time last year, did anybody even know the name other than people maybe like you or I who, you know, live this in this world? Did anybody know who Josh Metellus was? And yet he played literally every snap for the Vikings. They were essentially a big nickel defense. You can call him what you want. He's a safety by trade, but he literally played every position, you know, including pass rusher in that defense. Yeah. So, you know, different coaches see things differently, but I would expect Van Ginkle to be a really important part of that defense.
Green Bay Packers made two interesting moves. Well, they swapped out Aaron Jones for Josh Jacobs. We'll get to that in a minute because I think you and I see this similarly. But they also gave a four-year, $68 million deal to Xavier McKinney, former Giant safety, $25 million guaranteed. He was, to me, I loved his tape. He was locked on guy from slot to free. He played some outside corner at times. Allowed 33 catches on 54 targets for 288 yards, 235 yards after the catch, no touchdowns, three picks, 11 pass breakups, and an opponent passer rating of 52.1. So new defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley, everything I've heard is going to be more aggressive, press-based and all that, and I think McKinney, you know, great player, and in that sort of realm, a great fit.
Well, McKinney's another guy that can play multiple spots on the back end. So yeah. If you decide, which I think Hafley will do more so than Joe Barry, to be a little more aggressive with your pressure concepts, McKinney, not only can he be part of pressures, but he can play over the slot. He can play in the box. He can play on the back end. He did all this at Alabama, by the way, which is one reason why he was a first-round pick, because you saw him as a guy.
They throw those guys, those six-position players at Alabama.
Like, yeah, and obviously, you know, in the NFL, he was not going to do all that right away, but he's capable of it. And now that he's been around the block a few times, he probably has a pretty good sense of how it all works. But you know, he's a more multiple player than Darnell Savage. You know, I think that they ended up with a player who clearly fits Jeff Hafley better than Darnell Savage might have, and because obviously Savage is gone, and they replaced him with McKinney. But I thought that was a good signing.
Yeah. Swapping out Aaron Jones for Josh Jacobs. I think you had a strong opinion about this, Mr. Cosell.
Yeah, I mean, look, I like Josh Jacobs. I always have. This is reasonable. People can disagree on this. I personally would rather have Aaron Jones. And again, it's not where I think Aaron Jones is a 10 and Josh Jacobs is a 4. You know, we're not talking about a massive difference between the players. I think Aaron Jones gives you a little more in terms of what you can do offensively. I think he's better in the pass game. Not that Josh Jacobs is bad, but I think Jones is better. I think Jones gives you more formation versatility. I really like Aaron Jones. We saw what he did down the stretch a year ago when he finally got healthy. And, you know, obviously he signed with the Vikings, but, you know, they clearly felt that's Josh Jacobs, who they paid more money to than they would have had to keep Aaron Jones, I imagine. They clearly felt he's more important to what they want to do. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They know more about what they want to do than I do. I just personally like Aaron Jones better as a player.
And Jones goes to the Vikings, on a one-year, $7 million deal. Well, here's from week 16 through the divisional round when he was like full go, totally healthy.
He led the NFL in rushing.
He led the NFL in rushing attempts, rushing yards, and he averaged 4.11 yards after contact per attempt with a league-high 29 forced missed tackles. If you get that Aaron Jones, wow. And the Vikings,
if he can stay healthy. I mean, he's struggled with injuries, and that could have been a concern.
That is unquestionably a thing. And the third down stuff, I mean, I remember this going back to Mike McCarthy. Like, why isn't Aaron Jones more on the field on third down? And McCarthy would say these cryptic things. And I think he's not a good pass catcher, which he is. He doesn't block, which I don't know. I don't know what the thought process was. But, interesting. Speaking of running backs, Greg, your Philadelphia Eagles, the team in your backyard. Howie Roseman does not spin on running backs, but this time he did. Saquon Barkley gets a three-year, $37.75 million deal with $26 million guaranteed. What does this mean for Philly's offense? And I know, again, strong opinions on running backs. You've had some very strong opinions about what Barkley can and can't do. And let's fold Landon Dickerson's new deal in their 4 years, $84 million with $50 million guaranteed. That's a lot of schedule, as they say in your neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably fits with what Kellen Moore wants. Kellen Moore is creative as an offensive play caller and designer. We know Barkley can line up anywhere in the formation. He's a really good receiver. He's an explosive runner. I don't think he's shown to be a sustaining runner in a strict sense. You know, he's not the kind of guy that when it's blocked for three gets seven or eight, but he is explosive. But what's interesting about paying the money to Barkley, obviously they decided they wanted him, you know, and again, I'm sure in their scouting department and personnel department, they felt as if he's a really good player. And I think most people do, and that's okay.
This wasn't like, well, we have $26 million guaranteed in this little box for any running back who comes along. They wanted him.
Correct. So, which now you wonder, and just you know, when I saw the signing, it just made me think, and again, these are just thoughts, and you and I have them when we see these signings, and we could be dead wrong. You never know because we're not in the meetings with the teams.
Right.
But we saw that Jalen Hurts struggled a bit a year ago. We know that Jalen Hurts at times has issues seeing the middle of the field clearly. He works much better outside the numbers where it's much cleaner. Is there going to be, with a new coordinator, a little bit of a philosophical change in how they play offense? I think with Howie Roseman as the GM and Jeffrey Lurie as the owner, they'll never be, you know, they're never going to look like the Tennessee Titans when they had Derrick Henry in his prime. But I wonder if they feel that, hey, we need to pull the reins back a little bit, maybe become more balanced with a more conventional run game. And, you know, we just a thought, as I said, I don't think you spend that kind of money on Barkley for him to be a maybe yes, maybe no player, depending on the week, which is essentially what DeAndre Swift was.
Right.
You know, it was, hey, 1 week, oh, yeah, the game played out. Yeah, we can give it to him 18 times. The next week, the game played out. Oh, he's only getting 7 carries. My sense is they didn't sign Barkley for that reason.
Well, maybe they signed Barkley. Jalen Hurts carrying the ball over 100 times for 900 yards and 15 touchdowns. Maybe that's not the best use of our resources. I don't know.
And again, this is just you and I talking. We don't know the answer to that, but I can't imagine that they signed Barkley, you know, to have him in certain weeks carry the ball 7 times.
Right, because Hurts can do that. He's great at it. I mean, I love the tush push and, you know, the
I don't know, and they'll still do that, obviously.
Quarterback run game, when they went to the Super Bowl 2 years ago, the quarterback run game, you and I talked about this, tied the whole offense together. It was like,
and I think that at that point,
it all just worked beautifully.
And I think at that point, it took the league by storm a little bit. And last year, you know, it didn't work as well because I'm sure coaches spent last summer, you know, defending it. Look, you wrote a whole book about this stuff.
Yep.
And obviously, I study this as well. It's all cyclical. You know, it's like when the zone read came in with Kaepernick and everybody said that would revolutionize the game. Well, nothing really revolutionizes the game. It does add to the game. But then what happens is defenses or offenses, whatever the case may be, you know, it's like when the 46 defense came in the 80s with Buddy Ryan. And for a couple of years, it seemed like it was just unstoppable. Like no one could run offense against it. And then, you know what? Offenses figure it out. And now the 46 principles are part of the game.
Sure.
So things become part of the game. That's what eventually happens. They become part of the game, but they don't revolutionize the game.
Yeah. And the Niners were doing this with a 3-quarterback system with Brody and Billy Kilmer and some other guy like 1961 with Red Hickey. I mean, everything old is new again. So a few deals I love that I just want to get your take on. Frankie Louvu, the linebacker, goes from the Panthers to the Commanders, 3 years, $36 million. One of my favorite players just to watch last year, regardless.
I agree.
You know, he's about half a Mike, and then outside can line up anywhere on the line, can cover all the way out to curl flat, just a tremendously resourceful, just versatile player. And you can see Dan Quinn doing all kinds of crazy stuff with Frankie Louvu.
Yeah, I mean, he can play on the ball, off the ball. He can rush the quarterback. He can play in space. Just I noticed him about, I guess when he was with the Jets, about, what was that, about 4 years ago, give or take?
He had 3 years with the Panthers, I believe.
Yeah, and I just said, wow, this guy's a really good player. And then, of course, even though the Panthers haven't been, you know, a really good team, so I certainly haven't seen every one of their games, you know, just because I don't have that kind of time in my week during the season doing the matchup show. I can't watch every single game every week. But every time I'd watch the Panthers, he stood out. And I've always really liked him as a player.
He does. Love him. I don't know how this happened. Danico Autry to the Texans, 2 years, $20 million with $10.5 million guaranteed. I've been, you know this, Greg, I've been the president of the Denique Autry fan club for about 4 years. This guy, the best way I would put it, inside, outside, and the stats are great, the tape is great, but it seems like wherever he is, he will just pull your defensive line together. He's the glue of that defensive line. And what that does for the Texans, now they lose Greener, but they still have Will Anderson. I mean, that to me is a spectacular fit for what D'Amico Ryans wants to do.
Well, don't forget, D'Amico Ryans came from San Francisco. And what do they have in San Francisco? They always had a player, Charles Omenihu, players like that who could play both D-end and D-tackle.
Armstead.
D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Autry is that player.
Yep.
I remember when the Titans signed him 4 years ago, and I do Titans radio, and I said, that's a great signing because I saw him in Indianapolis, and that's what he did in Indianapolis. And he was really good those final couple of years in Indianapolis. And when healthy, he's been a, at times, dominant player for the Titans. So he's getting older, so we'll assume that he still can play at his same high level.
He played last year. I didn't see him drop last year at all.
No, I agree. So assuming that, they now have someone that D'Amico Ryans, in terms of the structure of his fronts, depending on down and distance situations, personnel, all those things, they have a guy that can line up either a D-end or D-tackle. I mean, when the Titans went to their dime defense, okay? Mm-hmm. Autry and Simmons were the two D tackles, and they were at Jeffrey Simmons, so people know who I'm speaking about. And those guys were as good as there was in the league with those inside TT stunts.
Oh,
they were so good. So, you know, Autry, he's just been a really, really good player who's multi-positional.
Yep, love him. We discussed Aaron Jones to the Vikings. Geno Stone to the Bengals, 2 years, $14
million. That was an interesting signing to me.
Really? He led all safeties with 7 interceptions last season, but you and I talked.
So who's not going to play safety for them?
I don't know, but this, I mean, last year.
Battles won the job late in the season.
Right.
They still have Hill, who's a really high level athlete.
But is he like a safety or is he more that sort of all over the place guy?
Well, he played safety.
Right. Okay.
So, I mean, you know, somewhere along the line there, they must not be happy with one of those guys, Battle or Hill, because they did not sign Geno Stone to play in you know, specialty situations.
No.
So that was one of the signings, Doug, and I'm just being honest, where I don't want to say I'm surprised. They know their players better than I do, but they had two starting safeties returning.
Yeah.
One is a high level athlete in Hill. Yep. And I know he struggled at times with his, to see things the right way, unless they plan on moving him because he does have corner traits. And
I'm kind of thinking that's where the ball bounces.
And they just lost a woozy, but you know, they have Turner and the other corner. Tell me the other, Taylor Britt. They have those two guys. So I don't know what they plan on doing. You know, and I guess we'll find out, but they do. And Battle had clearly replaced Nick Scott, who had been a free agent signing the year prior, last year at this time, but you know, you got to the last part of the season and Battle was playing, you know, 85% of the snaps. And again, we're not grading the players. You know, when I watch tape, just like when you watch tape, we're not sitting grading guys on every play because we don't know what their exact assignment is and we don't have that kind of time. So, but the point is those guys were their starting safeties. Hill's only going into his third year. Battle is only going into his second year. So somewhere along the line, they think, my sense is maybe they're thinking Hill is a corner because Battle is a safety. He can't play anywhere else.
Right.
So,
the thing about Stone, we've talked about this with the Cowboys, with Diggs and Bland, and these guys who have.
I mean, unless they're going to play a lot more, you know, big nickel.
I was going to say it could be big nickel time, but the thing about
Battle does have a linebacker traits.
He does. So Stone led all safeties with 7 interceptions last season, but he's not one of those Diggs, Bland, Cowboys guys who gets, you know, 25 interceptions and the rest of it's just mystery meat. He was very consistent as a deep third guy. So, and what I wrote was the Bengals are still kind of in transition from the Jesse Bates, Von Bell era. I think this helps a lot. And I was actually, because the Seahawks dumped Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs, and I know Jamal Adams isn't a safety per se, and they still have Love from the Giants that got last year. I thought for sure Geno Stone was coming to Seattle because it was like, oh, God, that's a perfect fit.
Well, you know, the more I think about it, too, is I don't think either Hill or Battle is a post safety. And Stone is that guy.
He is absolutely a post safety. That's his best thing.
Yeah, so, but, you know, at some point you need a post safety. And again, we're not comparing him to Earl Thomas, but, you know, I remember speaking to Dan Quinn, you know, years ago, and he said Earl Thomas was the most important player on that defense with the Legion of Boom because he covered up all the mistakes because of the way he played on the back end. And again, it's just so people understand, I'm not saying Geno Stone is Earl Thomas, but he is a post safety. And I don't think Hiller Battle is truly a post safety.
I asked Pete Carroll in 2014, I was doing a piece for SI when I was there about the value of Earl Thomas. I said, why is Earl Thomas so important to your defense? And he answered the question with a question. He said, when was the last time you saw someone throw a deep post on us?
Yeah.
I kind of laughed and went, okay. There was that game in 2016 against the Panthers where Earl got hurt, and the very next play, Cam Newton threw a 60-yard post touchdown to Ted Ginn. I'm like, oh, I guess that's what you mean, Pete.
Yeah.
Some guys just have that.
Yep. So, yeah, I mean, so that could well be the reason, you know, that they just – because their defense did give up too many big plays this year, and, you know, they didn't really have a post safety.
Nope, they didn't. Well, Greg, you're always our post safety. Great stuff as always. I could go another hour on the guys who haven't been signed yet who will get signed by the time this is out, so we won't do that. But as always, great X's and O's and free agency. My suspicion, Dr. Costell, is that next week we will turn our attention back to the draft, but we'll just have to see how that goes. As always – thanks for the great info and analysis, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Doug.